it's in front of the chairperson.
No, you're the chairman.
Oh, okay. Wait, really? I thought I was the council member now. Technically. Well, all right.
You've got to elect a new
that's
chairman,
true.
So.
All right. Today is February 6th, 2017. This is the first meeting of 2017 for the Law Enforcement Advisory Committee. My name is Vince Rossini, and I am currently the chairperson, soon to be outgoing, and I am the incoming city council member. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order and ask our city manager to please take roll, if that would be possible, or would you like me to do it if you're unfamiliar with the name, sir?
I don't know the people okay. here, so
I'll go ahead and read off all those in attendance. On the committee, we have Jay Wasserman, Richard Merg.
Here.
We have Lieutenant Puckett.
Here.
We have John Whitman.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bob Collicott, Councilmember Vince Rossini, and current chairperson. We have committee member Mike Felix. We have Deputy Benzie, and of course, Tom Dodge. We are missing Eric Reynolds and a representative from Neighborhood Watch. Typically, that is Wayne Solzell. Tom Dodge is a member of the public, but regularly attends our meetings and is in a sense, almost a quasi-member. He is an expert in our community emergency response team. We appreciate his attendance, as well as our sworn personnel. We're going to go ahead and have any public comment, if anyone would like to say anything. Tom, go ahead.
Toward your roll call, this morning I submitted an application to become a member.
Outstanding.
Also, after Saturday morning, I believe I'm going to be PSR supervisor for Villa Park.
Outstanding.
And we have one other volunteer who does not live in Villa Park, but is volunteering to serve in Villa Park as a PSR.
Great. Well, that's fantastic news. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate your volunteerism and your dedication to our community. Any other public comment? Hearing none, seeing none. Moving forward, on to discussion items. I think... based upon what our city, even though it's not technically an agendized item, it's a procedural matter. And out of an abundance of caution, I asked our city manager as well as the city attorney to weigh in on whether we could have a reorganization of the Law Enforcement Advisory Committee at this meeting, despite the fact that it's not a specifically agendized item. And the answer was yes. Procedurally, yes, that should not be an issue. At this point in time, I would like to take any comments on that and see if we have some recommendations to replace me as the chairperson and to potentially elect a new vice chairperson if John would like to step down. He's more than welcome to stay there. That's just items out for discussion.
Just by way of background, since of course Vince is now a member of the City Council, this is this is intended to be a citizens advisory committee. In other words, not a City Council person. Although Vince has been appointed by our mayor to be one of the representatives, along with myself from the City Council, on this committee. We're here to get your input. So Vince can't be chairman any longer. We need to have one of our resident law enforcement professionals be the chairman of the committee.
I got a nomination.
So do I.
For Jay to be our chair.
And I nominate John to retain your position as vice chair.
Unless someone else wants it. I'd prefer not to be, but if, you know, but I'll you know, if no one else wants vice chair, I'll be, but I just don't want to be chair.
Oh, I have the position. Can I second any of this?
No.
I didn't think so.
I don't know that this is formal.
Okay. So we're all good to go?
No, not necessarily. My bandwidth is very limited right now, and I'm concerned that I wouldn't have the ability to accomplish all the requirements as chair on the committee. I'm not sure what all the requirements are at this point, so maybe a review of what is required would be helpful.
One of the things I've had individuals approach me offline about meeting on a every other month basis. Not out of a lack of need in this community. Obviously, we've demonstrated as a committee the incredible worth in reduction of crime and the education of our residents and our neighbors and our friends about the perils of some of the legislation that's come out of Sacramento and even nationally. The community has reached out to us and thanked us, and obviously they believe in what we do. There have been past efforts to minimize or even possibly disband the LEAC, and that was met with an overwhelming response from our community, which was heck no. But I also understand that this is a tremendous, tremendous amount of time that is spent. We all have so many other things that we volunteer, and some of us still currently work, which is, you know, there are other committees that may have some folks that are similar, but not I wouldn't say necessarily 100% the same. That's something that I'd float out there, and if that potentially makes your decision a little bit easier, plus it gives us more time to gather information and fully vet things that may be going on in and around the community, allow statistics and crime trends to come in, allow the Sheriff's Department more time to gather data if needed. That's something that may be of assistance to you. I don't know. I think it's something that the remainder of the committee members need to discuss, but it's just my two cents.
Okay. Well, my understanding of what the chairman does is basically the chairman is another one of the committee members, but we need the chairman works with the city manager in putting together the agenda for the meeting. You know, typically what the way things have gone is the city manager puts together a draft based on input, you know, received from various sources, including the other committee members and the chairman. You review it and you know, approve it before it goes out. So that's typically done by email, I believe. And by email.
Okay, got it.
Okay, and then actually chairs the meetings, you know, conducts the meeting like we're doing tonight. Other than that, that's the purpose of the
and
chairman.
And the in-person presentations to the council.
Oh, yes, and the presentations to the council.
Which is the one that I'm not interested in doing.
Yeah.
So my concern is that I'm going to be probably in March starting grad school.
Oh, and congratulations.
Night classes, thank you. And I'm in for a lot. I know, it's going to be a lot of work. And I just don't know what my availability is going to be. You know, right now I take my kids on Tuesdays and Fridays to Westminster Ice for workouts, and I'm going to try to work out grad school to flip in between there somehow, but I don't know what my availability will be, and this is going to be roughly, you know, year and a half, 2 year program. So it wouldn't be right for me to not be at meetings or skip school, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just, it's cost too much to do that. You know, one of the things that I was potentially contemplating was if this could be like, instead of a chair and a vice chair, have like co-chairs and do something of that nature. But also, like, my other volunteer work, I delegate a lot, and I would need to do the same thing with amongst the committee. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, you can't just do all the heavy lifting. I mean, I've got my regular job, I've got my volunteer side with the Sheriff's Department. This is like a third thing, right? And starting grad school on top of it is a lot. It's a double full plate, so.
Yeah.
To back up what Jay is saying, too, we've asked him to take on some additional responsibilities with the reserve program specifically for this committee. Seeing that he has so much input with the reserves, we've asked him to do a double assignment of the Harbor Division and North Patrol, which is going to increase his reserve workload as is.
Well, so just a suggestion. First of all, if for some reason you can't make a meeting, We do have a vice chair that can carry forth. And certainly we would expect that you would delegate as much as you could to the committee, regardless of who's chairman.
Yeah. I think it's real important for any committee, you have to evolve. And if you have the same people in leadership positions, the committee doesn't evolve. You have to get other voices in leadership. You have to get other people that direct things. If you keep the same little guys in there and people aren't willing to step up to take on more roles, then your committee's really going to get stale. So, Vince and I did it for the last 2 years. You know, it'd be nice to see some other people step up and want to take on a more active role.
Well, also, with Vince moving up to the city council, which is, a real compliment to this committee by the residents, we're looking to recruit another person. So, maybe we can come back and revisit that, the chairmanship if you so decide, once we get somebody else on. Maybe somebody else will come on and they'll want to be, agree to be chairman. So, but we need to have a chairman starting now. So,
or if we want, as vice chair, I'd be willing to, until we can get another member and we can, figure it out, then, like I said, I'd be willing to, on an interim basis, step in until we can figure it out. But, I'll make it clear that my desire is to not be chair.
Okay.
But I would be willing to step in until we can fill that spot. And then I would hope that someone else is going to step up and take the gavel on that.
Well, how about as an alternative? Why don't we just table the election of a chairman and bring it back onto the agenda once we... are able to recruit another.
Where does that stand? Do we have any candidates in mind?
There's a couple of folks, one in particular that might be interested. I'd like to try and bend a few more arms and see if we could get some folks to step out of their comfort zone a little bit. Folks that have expressed interest in helping out the community but are just, given our prior past experience, with... let's just say a less than cordial invitation from some folks, hesitant to get involved. Obviously, I think that the current city council is a little bit more receptive and understands the significance of this committee in our community, and I think they'll be met with a much warmer response. So. Simply put, yes, we've got some folks that we're looking at that we hope will step up.
Okay. So what's everybody's thought about just tabling this until we complete a recruitment?
Sounds good.
Okay. Work for you?
Works for me.
Mike?
Yep.
Okay.
It's good. Good.
And you never know who might volunteer, so.
Okay, so that being the case, am I taking over the meeting now then?
Yeah.
Okay, just let's make it clear now. We know what the rules are right here, okay? There's not
going to
be any strong arm in here, man. No way.
Well, you stepped into city council.
I'm not really cheering.
All right, so discussion item A then. Update on storm drain collapse at Mesa and Henderson.
I asked the city engineer, Akram, to give you an update on that, since he has the latest information.
I'm Akram, the city engineer. I don't know everybody here, but as you know, the storm drain collapse 3 weeks ago, we had the county public works plus a private contractor to assist us in removing the landscape and also removing the collapse pipe within the private property and private easement that we have on that site. We are able to remove the pipe and allow the flow of the water during the last storm, and at the same time we protected the residents by putting some what we call the muscle wall, and that in case if we had any other failure or water, the flood reached to the property, it would be protected from any water going into the house itself. So during that time, We had also some of the pine trees that next to the tennis court right at the beginning of the easement fell down, and we had to come in with a special big crane to be able to cut those trees and remove them from there. So it is, we've kept and we were allowed, I mean, we are able to maintain the flow with the existing pipe and the natural channel that we opened between the two pipes. It will remain like that for a temporary, for a while, until we come up with a permanent solution for that.
There's our new chairman.
There's our new chairman.
There he is.
Congratulations.
I second.
When you come in late.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
For all those who just arrived, their meeting is recorded, and committee member Eric Reynolds came in, and we're all happy to see him, and happy New Year, and thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
All right. You just sit at the table.
That's true. You should sit at the table.
Just a quick question. Oh, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Sure.
So it is the condition that allows the storm to flow from the storm flow without impacting the soil, to come up with a permanent solution and so on. We're still working on some legalities from the ownership and the easement and who is supposed to maintain it. The county is declared a state of emergency for the County of Orange, and they've requested from the governor to declare that the same.
Right, I saw that. The governor did do a state of emergency on the last rains that would create the opportunity for people to put in for requests for monies to repair
but
damages.
It was limited only for Caltrans streets and so on.
Okay.
And did not include the last storm that we had in our area.
Okay.
So that's why the county did declare a state of emergency and requested from the governor to do the same. We do have visits from the emergency team to come in and visit our site, because it would we put in an estimate a little bit high. So that's one of the sites that they're going to be visiting to determine the damage.
So with the county declaring it an emergency as well, does that potentially free up a chance for the city to get some type of reimbursement for if it does turn out to that it's the city's responsibility in any way of the city being able to recapture some monies that it might take to repair this?
Not until the governor declare it.
Okay.
And then we'll have state and federal funds to be available for that.
Okay.
Otherwise, the county does not have funds to to provide us.
All right.
All right. Any questions?
Yeah. The pipe is the pipe in question is you said it was a 96 inch corrugated metal pipe.
That is correct.
Okay. 96 inches is 8 foot diameter pipe, and my earlier career was all in flood control, and don't use corrugated metal pipe for storm drains, just because of what happened a couple of weeks ago, is that the corrugated metal pipe will, particularly for a storm drain, you've got standing water and all the time on the bottom, and at some point in time, the galvanized coating wears away, and you get corrosion, and the bottom of the pipe erodes and rusts out, and it basically clamshells on itself and collapses. So that's pretty much what we had. We lost about 200 feet of, my guess is about 200 feet of pipe. We've got another 100 feet or so that goes underneath the tennis court. The channel upstream of that is a natural, just a natural gully, kind of goes along Mesa and then further east. But what we've done, or what the county did, is they pulled out the old pipe for the 200 feet that goes from the tennis court all the way down to near the intersection of Mesa Drive and Henderson. and left it as an open channel. And at that point, at that intersection of the Henderson and Mesa, it enters a reinforced concrete pipe.
Correct.
Which 90, is
90 inch.
90 pipe. Inch. Okay. And so they dug that out. Then with the heavy storms we had on the following day, on that, I guess it was. We identified it on a Saturday. On Sunday, by about 11 o'clock or so, the county's workers finished pulling out the old pipe and creating a channel. About an hour later, we started getting heavy storm flows, and we had the heavy storms that Sunday afternoon and evening. And it further eroded away, and the channel now is about 18 feet wide at the top and about 12 feet, 13 feet at the bottom. So it's eroded itself a pretty nice channel. So far, the storm drain or the corrugated metal pipe underneath the tennis court has held up, but the tennis court is has subsided a bit towards the net of the tennis court goes right along the top of the corrugated metal pipe, but it's sunk a little bit too in the center. But so far, it's holding up. Akram and Mike, our maintenance guy, did go into that pipe and determine that it's also deformed and rusted at the bottom, so we don't know when that's going to collapse. So that's another concern we've got going forward. So that's where we are now. Akram has the on the downstream end of this ditch. There's a remnant of corrugated metal pipe before it goes into the reinforced concrete pipe. Has there been any erosion around the perimeter of the pipe?
No, but you can see that the bottom of the pipe is already rusted out and so on, and there are some areas where it's...
On the downstream end?
Downstream, that's
okay.
Right.
Where's that at?
That's still within the portion of the property.
Oh, okay, got it.
But that pipe goes into a concrete pipe.
Oh, that's the one that's closest to their street?
Closer to the street.
Got it, okay.
Yeah, closer to the street.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, so there's, and there's...
And if we're going to be doing anything, that's that portion...
That's a smaller pipe at that end, too, isn't it?
It becomes smaller.
That's what I thought, yeah.
It's 90 inch versus 96.
Okay.
And so the permanent solution for the long term, we'll be looking at the different options. What we're going to do, is it pipe, is it natural, or whatever, you know, it becomes appropriate for a permanent flow.
Tom?
Is the corrugated pipe the same thing we've got under Bell Park Road?
We talking about sewer line? Talking about sewer line?
No.
Oh.
The
storm drain?
Flow down the creek. And at the other end, too, in Collins, but that's City of Warren.
40 years ago, 50 years ago, the corrugated pipe, its corrugated pipe, was popular and was being used for storm drains. Now it's being, you know, not used as much, you know, and matter of fact, hardly anybody uses it now. But yes, there are some pipes within the city and also within the county that are still corrugated pipes. And that's what, you know, we're doing as part of the storm drain master plan. We're reviewing and checking all the corrugated pipes to see if there is any damage or rusting out and so on, so we can take care of it by either relining it or doing other improvements to it in order to extend the life of that pipe.
Don Paul, our city manager, also called out the when this was first identified on the Saturday morning, called out the fire department and the sheriff's department to provide emergency assistance.
Okay.
Yeah, just bringing things full circle. One of the reasons why this is before the committee is because of potential for evacuation. Plus, there's been numerous reports of kids playing in that creek upstream. Obviously, if we knew anybody that did that, we would have taken them underneath our wing and taken them out behind the woodshed and said, uh-huh. But so friends, family, anybody even hears about that kind of thing, notify the sheriff's department, Deputy Benzie, the school's parents, whatever, because that could really turn into a very, very tragic situation. So that's another reason why this is brought before the committee.
In fact, when we went inside the concrete pipe, there's graffiti in there. Mm-hmm. So you could tell that there were kids were inside the pipe.
Very, very dangerous.
Yeah, I've heard stories of grown men saying that, yeah, back in the 70s, I used to hide from the sheriff department by running through that culvert. The sheriff's deputies wouldn't fall, so.
I think it should be also noted that Vince and the Mayor Pro Tem contacted the supervisor, Todd Spitzer. We were working on the other side with the staff from the Department of Public Works. And they were coming back and telling us that it belonged to us. It wasn't the county's. And so we, you know, have two maintenance workers. So that's not going to solve this problem. We did have a private contractor out there, which was great. But through Todd Spitzer, he went to the Director of Public Works. And at the same time, I contacted Steve Franks, who hopefully will be your new city manager tomorrow night, who also gave me the Director of Public Works telephone number, since he is a high-ranking official in the county. And the county responded extremely well, and we are paying them back for all of their costs. And they weren't sure they could get the muscle wall. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. I wasn't. It's like K-rail, but it's plastic, and you fill it with water and cover it with plastic and then seal it with sandbags. And it definitely would protect the house if the rain had gone over the boundaries of the channel, because water started coming into the channel and they weren't able to put any biscuit into it or do anything to reinforce it. The fire department, just to follow up on the Mayor Pro Tem's comment, the fire department was standing by with hundreds of sandbags to protect the house, because the county wasn't sure they could get the muscle wall, they're short on it. And so we would have used sandbags at that point, and they would have then brought manpower in to protect that house, which, it would have been a horrendous liability for the city, because this is a city-owned facility, and it would have been collateral damage on neighbors downstream in that street. So Todd Spitzer, we have thanked him profusely.
I'm very thankful for Orange County Public Works for participation. Supervisor Spitzer, Orange County Fire Authority, and Lieutenant Puckett and his resources,
right,
who were on scene and working from inception on this issue, and throughout the following days, I should say. And we were lucky that we got it done when we got it done, because then literally, as Mayor Pro Tem Collicott said, all hell broke loose within just a short period of time after it was fully excavated. So.
Now if we can get some money back from Uncle Brown, why, that would be, would be great.
Yes.
Okay, any other comments, questions on that one? All right, we'll move to B, monthly crime stats, citations, traffic collisions, and we might as well segue into C one more while we're at it, because they seem like they both tie in. So I'll turn it over to Lieutenant Puckett.
We might actually segue into a few more things as well, because I have quite a bit of information for the group tonight, being that 2016 is wrapped up and we have some numbers that I think will be of interest to the group. I do have to apologize, though. I'm on a slight time crunch tonight, and I have to be gone by about 7:20. So I'm going to throw a whole bunch of information your way, and then I'm sure this is going to generate some discussion. So we can start with the crime stats. I'm going to pass around year-end crime stats for the city, and these will be compared. There's also a graph on there for the 2015 crime stats, so we can see where we didn't do so good, and we can see where we did really good. But if you could just pay attention to the first portion of this, where it shows the crime stats for 2015 and 2016. Am I short one? Absolutely. And then we'll talk about the pages after that when we're done. One more or two more? Okay. So you can see crime for 2016 really was on track for about the same numbers as crime of 2015 was. And the issue is when we deal with numbers so small with Villa Park, that if we did a percentages, if we go from 0 to 1, then you're seeing a 100% increase in crime. But the reality is the trends were consistent for both years. And so total crimes for your part one crimes for 2015, you had 88 crimes committed during the year. And for 2016, you had 94. So nothing that we would consider to be a strong crime increase, but we consider the numbers to be pretty much the same. With these, the most important crimes arguably would be your violent crimes. And for 2015, you had one violent crime. And for 2016, you had one violent crime. Property crimes, a slight increase from 86 to 89. And as we talk about this, going back to number C, burglaries at construction sites, typically we would consider those to be residential burglaries because they are houses. And actually the numbers were down. So in 2015, you had 32 residential burglaries, and in 2016, you had 14. Now with that, unfortunately, I wasn't able to get how many of those were due to construction being accomplished at the houses. I can have those available for either whenever the council needs them. I can email them to the council. But with that, the numbers are still pretty small. One thing that is of interest that we will look into is if you look at the petty thefts and particularly the vandalisms, we're seeing an increase there. And traditionally, those will be caused usually by your juvenile population, which goes back to we're fortunate to have an SRO, but I can't say that because I don't have the empirical evidence to back it up right now. But we will be looking into it and seeing what type of reduction strategies we can put in place for 2017.
Now, do these numbers incorporate what's going on at the schools, or is this just in the community?
No, they would incorporate the schools as well, too.
Is there a way to break it out so that, you know, because, you know, the schools really aren't of great, you know, what goes on at the schools is goes on in the schools. It's not something the city can deal with or is responsible for.
Well, we can break it out however the council would like. I mean, the sheriff's department in the city, it's all within the city jurisdiction. So the crime strategies we have in place there, the city ultimately would be
responsible. I guess what I'm saying is that the schools don't, that's not the residents. It's
we're more concerned with the residents.
Yeah, what happens in our residential areas, what happens in our commercial?
No, I think everything in the school bleeds over into the neighborhood, so I think it all needs to be encompassed. So,
well, if there's this, you know, a theft of a laptop or something or a cell phone out of somebody's locker, that shouldn't really be reflected on the city.
The report that we put together is going to be fairly generic. But I can provide the council more detailed information within the next 2 months, and then you can extrapolate what we like or not like or whatever. But in terms of crime reporting, since that area is encompassed within city boundaries, our hands are kind of...
Would it be possible when you just do the steps like this that you have City of Villa Park and then schools? And then break them down a little bit more?
We wouldn't have the formula for that, but like I said, we can provide the individual crimes if that's something that the city would like to see in terms of trying to come up with a better analysis for different aspects that we may be looking for.
Yeah, we had this discussion a while back with Rob that, you know, what our residents are concerned about is what's happening, let's say, with residential burglaries, you know, in our neighborhoods, what's happening with thefts in our neighborhoods.
Sure.
You know, we've got, you know, a transient population that comes into Villa Park High School and leaves, you know, in the evening. So we have no control over that. That's not really affecting our residents so much. Yeah, if it does bleed over into our neighborhoods, it'll be reflected in our, you know, if there's a high school student that commits a robbery in an adjacent neighborhood, certainly that's going to impact our...
So you're saying just separate what happens at the school in another column. Yeah, I'm sure they probably do that later.
Yeah, again, this is what we get provided, and this is as a complimentary service to Villa Park, but we can provide all the information.
Who does that for you?
This is through our new stats detail.
Okay.
So we can provide the information if that's something the city would like to break down further to look at specific crime trends, particularly with this group. We can definitely provide that information. But with that, again, we'll go back to the petty theft and vandalisms, and we'll take a look to see what we can do to reduce that. In addition, a little thing of concern here is last year we had one stolen vehicle. This year we had three. So we'll take a look to see if there's any potential trends or if it's just one of those things with that as well. Now, if you look at the next page after that.
Those were all still really good numbers, though.
Yeah. Those are still very good numbers. So when I report the crime statistics to the council meeting, one of the things that I think I've been negligent on is to put a disclaimer out that they may change. Because until they've been vetted through this stat unit, typically they can be off by one or two. The reason being is, as the investigation unfolds, sometimes the crime gets unfounded. So, for example, right here we're looking at the crime stats for December. Now, at the council meeting, I reported five crimes. But here you're going to see that there's four. And it turned out the one at the high school was unfounded. I can't tell you the reason why, but if you remember correctly, it was an accusation of a stolen guitar, and it turned out later that wasn't the case. So the real number for December was you had four crimes. Now, this is what a service that's being provided to the other cities, but for Villa Park, I don't know how much use we will get out of it. But if you look at the preceding pages, what we're doing here is a model called predictive policing. And so what we'll do is we'll examine the crimes and try to determine causative factors such as days, hours of the days, and so on, to see if we can put together a policing strategy to help negate what's going on. Now, with Villa Park, traditionally, crime is so low that it doesn't really help me to say, listen, we have one commercial burglary on Sunday at 4 a.m. because that could just be what it is. Yorba Belinda, on the other hand, experienced 40 residential burglaries last week, and they have a serious crime trend going on. And so this type of model is helpful, so when we put out our surveillance teams, they know proper ingress and egress of where the crooks would most likely be. They would know typically they're getting hit Wednesdays at 2 in the afternoon. So the reason why I bring this to the council is because this is a new service that the Sheriff's Department is offering as a complimentary item. Because it had been brought to my attention that a few years ago, Villa Park had gotten hit with a series of residential burglaries. So while this doesn't really bear much weight on the fact that you only had four crimes, this isn't going to allow us to negate those four crimes. If Villa Park does experience a rash of incidents again, then we can put this model at play to help deploy our resources in a very cost-effective method, helping to reduce the crime as quickly as we can. So be aware for 2017, that is on the table. Before I go on to the traffic collisions for 2016, does anybody have any questions about this or these numbers?
What was the one robbery? I don't remember.
You know, I don't know. I can find out, though, if the group would like. It was a little bit before my time, unless Brian, our resident expert, knows.
Was that the one where the football player beat the heck out of the guy?
Yeah.
Are we talking about a robbery or are we talking about a burglary?
No, there's only one robbery.
I think that might have been the football player.
In May.
It was in his garage, because that was with, you know, threat or force, so.
I don't think that they pulled a DR for 211 on that particular case with a resident. It was an ex-football player.
Yeah, and he beat the heck out of the guy.
I think they went 459 on that.
Oh, they did? Okay.
And then maybe some 148. I don't know. I think the football player kind of took care of him.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, yeah. I was working at the time, but I heard it over the radio, and I believe they went 459 on that.
Yeah, so it's the burger. Because my thing is that if you want these violent crimes that we're going with, I would be interested to know what the robbery was, because I don't recall us ever really talking about a true robbery. But anyway, my point being, there's obviously not a lot going on violence-wise, and probably this one is probably not even going to be that.
It was in May then, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you have, you know, I just don't recall that ever over the year. Maybe it's just me. But that if they had in this whole entire thing, maybe just a description of something like, you know, the one robbery that we had, the one violent thing that we had. You know what? That was when the residents came home to Resburg, and the husband and the wife, the husband became concerned about the wife, and I believe, I'll quote you on this, but I believe he
is this a taser, some sort of stun gun, some sort of less lethal weapon used?
Absolutely.
And he was roughed up a little bit, and then I think they were caught down the street.
They took one into custody, and then in a rental car down the street.
Right, and then
I remember.
Resident sold the house.
Yep, I remember.
Left the community, unfortunately.
I remember.
I got a question. On James Road, on the residential burglary, it says coded lockbox. Was that a real estate lockbox or a medical lockbox?
A real estate lockbox.
Sounds like an inside job, then, huh?
Yeah, I know. That's my only thing is sometimes with these stats, we're in such a good position city-wise that, you know, sometimes even that little one robbery people want to complain about, we could probably bust that thing down to a simple battery. But, you know.
Well, that might be helpful to back up what Councilman Kulikov was saying. If the city wants to look at the stats and make them as such, it may be beneficial to whatever the will of this council is, because you know we're bound by what the FBI is saying.
Right, yeah, no, I totally get why you guys got to go that route, totally. My thing is just, you know, part of this whole thing was, I think this whole council thing was to actually tell everybody how safe it really is and stuff.
Right.
You know, and so in reality, you know, we could pick through this. I remember my first time seeing the stats and thinking all these stats were for the week, going, you know, my God, this is a lot for a week, when in reality it was the year.
Right.
So, I mean, that was like what Kulikov told me, you know, a long time ago, is we're kind of here to, you know, make it look like we're actually doing a great job, or the city's actually a great place to live. So that's why I think you're trying to separate those school things, kind of. And
yeah, our interest,
which I agree, which I kind of
sure
agree with.
Our priority,
well, you want to get it. Well, you want to see
is protecting our neighborhood.
Right. Well, you want to see little better picture of what's going on in the actual city, and not in the schools. So
I guess my point in saying it to you was, like, I think that's more how this all kind of started. Now it's obviously morphed into something a little different, and that's okay too. But
I mean, obviously,
the city is so safe.
If we can make our, we're also looking at ways to make our city safer.
And
we've got a number of initiatives going.
Right.
Well, December is typically a bad month for property crimes, and it looks to me like, you know, having only three is pretty good, you know, especially when you hear about all the thefts from doorsteps of packages being delivered and everything else, and we only had three, and had nine the December before in 15, so that's a significant drop there.
Well, especially when you consider the passage of a few propositions,
Right.
which shall remain nameless, you would expect property crimes to increase. Believe me, don't want to curse us.
Right.
Well, and you also have Neighborhood Watch, who's really taken effect in the last couple of years, and it's probably getting a lot more reporting. Mm-hmm. All this is getting, these little simple vandalisms and petty thefts are probably getting reported more because Neighborhood Watch is telling them, hey, report it.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and do it. I mean, numerous times at my house, I know that everyone on my street's been broken into, and they haven't reported it at one time. You know, but they leave their car open, so it's on them.
Gentlemen, any other questions about the year-end crime report? Okay, moving on to the traffic collisions for 2016. We asked our statistics group to put this together specifically for Villa Park. They've done it for one other city, and as they're learning their way, this is probably something they'll do on an annual basis. But what we're looking at, and here's a number that I'm going to point to you that's antiquated, but what cities traditionally use to determine traffic and collision problems in their city, and it's what's known as the traffic index. And so for Villa Park, I'm pleased to announce that our traffic index is fairly low. And the way we consider a traffic index as being appropriate is anything under 25 is considered as good to go. Now, last year, the traffic index for Villa Park for 2015 was 38, pretty high. And the way we get this is we divide the number of what we consider hazardous citations, which are your moving citations and whatnot, divided by your total number of traffic collisions. This year, so for 2016, your traffic index was 21.63, so underneath that 25 threshold, but obviously something we still need to pay attention to. Now, with that, the disclaimer that I'd give you is there's a lot of arguments that this traffic index is an old-fashioned way of doing business, but unfortunately, on the law enforcement side of the house, we don't have any other method to determine a level of effectiveness that gives us an empirical number. So with that, there's an argument to be said that the traffic index is old school, and we don't want to use that anymore. And if that's the case, it's very understandable. But that's where we're at for right now. Now, looking at this, if you look at the number of traffic collisions we have for 2016, we had a total of 67, which is pretty darn good. You're averaging one about every 5 days. And with that, you had a total of confirmed 8 traffic injuries, accidents. And then you had 8 where we don't know if they ended up being injury-related or not. 51 of the accidents were just simple fender benders, no injuries involved. And with that, if you look at the next slide down there, the intersections with the multiple collisions were Taft Avenue right in front of Villa Park High School. You had 11 traffic collisions there over the entire year. And then your second was going to be Center Drive and Villa Park Road with 7. And then from there, it starts to drop down pretty substantially. And if you go, there's additionally more intersections with different types of collision factors involved. And then the last section is a map for the city where all the collisions happened spread out throughout the city. Now, again, I'm going to assume this is something that everyone will look at over the coming months, and then we can make some recommendations in terms of future traffic enforcement and whatnot. But I found this information to be fairly fascinating, and I think you will too, because now it puts right here on paper with empirical evidence specifically what we're looking at in terms of collisions within our city. Cool. Does anybody have any questions about the 2016 traffic report?
So that basically is just collisions divided by PCF citations?
Yes, sir.
And PCFs being primary collision factor. Citations
for are those overall citations?
No, they're just simply what we call hazardous citations.
Okay, got it.
So,
how do you guys define that? Just curious.
I can bring the exact listing, but basically all of your moving citations would be considered hazardous citations.
Right, so basically, PCF, primary collision factor.
Okay. Terminology thing, I think.
So, like, now on these collisions, if you have these collisions, and let's say the traffic office later sends out a citation to cite the operators on these, which does happen sometimes, correct, after their investigation. Does that get included into those statistics, or is it strictly just off the citations that are written out in the field?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not 100% sure, okay. But I will look into it.
Because, I mean, obviously that skews the numbers if, you know.
It could.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate that. Anything else? So burglaries and construction sites then. So did we have anything to add on that? I know we've talked about that in the past as far as some measures that could be taken as far as requiring fencing. Do we know if these were construction sites that had fencing around them or whether they were still occupied residents that were?
For the two that we have?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure, but here's one thing I think we can do to mitigate this, and I would ask, whenever we have a large party in the city, there's a mechanism in place where the person throwing the party usually notifies somebody from the city, they notify me, and then I notify the deputies, and usually it's to ease parking concerns and things like that. I would be curious if there's a mechanism in place that if there is a construction of a house going on in the city, that we can put it out either through Neighborhood Watch or somebody else to notify us so I can notify the deputies, and then additional patrol checks can be completed in that fashion.
Actually, our building officials should be able to notify the sheriff if there's a significant construction project going on.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'd like to see that also get trickled down to the PSRs for when they're doing their, you know, their checks around doing vacation checks or whatever, however we are, you know.
Well, I tell you, one of the unique things about the city is there's only 4 deputies, so the communication link is fairly quick.
Right.
And Lieutenant Gunzel had an excellent system in place that was a simple email, so whenever there's concerns in the city, the storm drain was a good example. When that collapsed, we immediately put out to the deputies for additional patrol checks and be aware of this, and they were on it. So with that, any type of information the city can provide to me, then we can provide additional checks and hopefully mitigate this a little bit.
Yeah, these burglaries at construction sites has been an ongoing problem. Mm-hmm. So earlier on, through a recommendation from this committee, we asked Bill Tarrant, our building official, to start notifying anybody who was pulling a permit that this is a problem, and I believe he's still doing that.
I think that's
right. And to take measures to make sure that they secured their equipment and materials.
Right.
I actually just want to weigh in on this particular agenda item. I ask that this be discussed this evening out of an overabundance of caution. I'm happy to see the trend. I think the fact that we have mandatory fencing and that there's more awareness within our community has paid some dividends, not to mention more significant patrols. But I had a neighbor of mine who says either the second or third time that during his construction was burglarized, and in my opinion, and I think probably his opinion, his own fault and or the contractor's fault for leaving unsecured items of value, even despite the fact that there, in one circumstance, there was not a construction fence, but the second time there was, still they could have done some better things,
right,
better types of fencing. I just wanted to delve into this, look at it, see how we're doing. And it sounds like the efforts that we are taking are paying off. Obviously, notifying our deputies of current and future sizable projects, I think, would even perhaps drive that number down lower. The other thing that I discussed with him is a camera system. Folks are obviously very well aware, whether it's an inside job or not, there's a ton of construction throughout Villa Park. As Mayor Pro Tem Colicott has mentioned, I think the jackhammers replaced the hummingbird.
Sorry, city bird.
As our city bird, it's making so much noise everywhere. So cameras are certainly a good idea for any sizable project of any duration. So I thank you for your efforts, and I thank you for the report.
You know, the other thing I thought about too is, you know, as you can, you know, some of these contractors may not even be aware that, you know, they're, you know, in a city like this, you know, maybe when they come in to pull a building permit at the city, you know, maybe the sheriff's department or their crime prevention specialist can come out with like a one-page leaflet that they can give to them when they get the permit. As far as
I think that's crime, what Bill's providing them at this point.
Okay, like crime trends, we're seeing an increased rash of thefts that, and then, you know, just to make them aware of it, so they'll be extra vigilant to, you know, take their tools with them each day, or lock them in a box, or do something.
Just make it a lot more difficult.
You know, make sure they have serial numbers for all their equipment, so if they do get stolen, they can provide serial numbers for everything. So
before we go on, there was one other crime that I think we need to talk about, and that is Villa Park had a sexual assault last week. Obviously, there's some victim confidentiality rules here, so I can't get into the details of the investigation. But the issue at play here was a 17-year-old girl at the high school was basically forced into doing something that she didn't want to do. We mobilized a team of investigators. Thanks to Deputy Benzie, the suspect was identified and taken into custody, and this is an isolated incident. There's no need to think that there's any type of trend here at all. But
is the suspect another student or somebody off campus?
Another student.
Okay, so did it occur at the school grounds then, or at a residence, or do we, or can you say?
We're gonna leave it at that, and I know you understand, but unfortunate incident. And I think it's just one of those, I hate to use the word fluke, but it's an abnormal trend that typically we don't see in the city, an unfortunate abnormal trend. So.
Well, it's good that it was reported and that was concluded.
Right.
But it occurred in Villa Park.
Yes. And obviously, if the council would like to know more, we can talk about it in closed chambers.
Okay.
Okay, anything else on crime trends or burglaries or construction sites? Okay, we'll go to Community Emergency Response Cert Program update. Tom Dodge, turn this one over to you.
I've been in contact with the lieutenant.
Okay.
As well as a few other people. I find more confusion the further I go. Well, Park at present has no one to provide any training to the CERT people. So I've been trying to find out through the state who trains the trainers, because I will get my.
Yeah, I thought at our last meeting we'd figured out someone was going to provide some type of training for the.
Yeah, I had made arrangements with the fire station.
Okay.
And when I went out to confirm, because I had dates established, they said we don't do that anymore.
Okay. So we're back to square one.
So I've got some updated information on that.
The sheriff's department is conducting a class. Unfortunately, it's only for PSRs and sheriff's deputies and reserves. It's going to take place over a period of 3 months, and I will probably put myself in it. I talked with the Jordan Bilbock, who's the coordinator for CMAP, which Villa Park does not belong to. That's Community Emergency, it's cooperative arrangement among cities. And I got invited to their meeting next Thursday. And I'll go and talk to them with what people are doing down there. The next trainer class that I found is in Hesperia, and it's a 40-hour class. It's a little over and above the budget. Our CERT budget is a grand total of $500. But I'm going to keep looking.
All right. Did we ever, I know you were going through and looking at the old list of CERT. Is that done now? Do we have a new established list of who's actually on the CERT program now?
I was given a list of 50 people. I sent emails out to them. I got positive responses from 12. And one lady said, I'm not doing it anymore. She turned her gear. The rest of them, I have heard absolutely nothing from.
Okay, Jane, did you have some information about training, a training class then?
I think Tom already heard it, but they told us that that they have, after years, finally completed putting a new CERT training together, and it will be, I think it's taught at the academy, right, in Tustin.
And
but we won't be able to put send our regular residents here. It'll only be for PSRs.
Then. Yeah, you need to be PSR.
Now, if the PSRs could go to some type of... Now, do resident people need to actually be certified, or could it be something where the PSRs could go out to this class and then relay what they learn at these classes to try to relay that to the...
Well, to be in CERT, you need to be
class. So the residents wouldn't have to necessarily have a certification to go to some regular class, but now you as PSRs go to this and you basically share your information with them and try to get them up to speed on things.
Yeah, I will try to, the whole city technically should take these courses.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
What to do for their own family.
It's finding someone that can teach them, though. That's the problem.
What I'm planning on doing, at least in the interim, is what I can pick up from these classes that the sheriff's department's having. And it's limited to 55 individuals. I'll set up sessions to pass the information on.
I hate to be the rainy day here, but we're looking at some extreme areas of exposure and liability here if we're going to take Sheriff's Department training and then turn that around into a let me show you what I learned absent an official certification, because now if something goes wrong, the emphasis is going to go back to the liability on you, the city, and the Sheriff's Department. So I think it would behoove the city, if we want to move forward with this program, to do everything we can to find that 40-hour trainer class. And to be honest, I'd like to thank Tom for his hard work, because the very fact that you found a trainer class in California was amazing. The closest one I could find was Maryland, so I don't know how you did that, but that's impressive. But I think if the I feel compelled to say that if we're going to move forward with this, then you need to be officially trained with the documentation to make sure the liability does not fall on you, the sheriff's department, or the city.
He's a trainer, then. It's an actual certified as a trainer, then.
Correct.
Sounds like the city might have to up their CERT budget if we want to get this done.
But then that makes the city also liable for everybody that gets taught through it, too.
Now, the one thing that Tom and I did talk about, and this depends on how badly the city wants a CERT program, is the fire department that did this in the past, and the sheriff's department would be more than happy to take it over. But obviously, that would require the city to pay for it, and I don't know how much that would cost. We can definitely look into that, but when we talk about overtime for deputies or going to the class or so on, there would be some type of cost associated with it. The nice thing about Tom is this is a free asset.
There were reserves that taught this before. So I don't know if they still do that or not.
I wouldn't be opposed to looking into that at all.
Yeah. Do you want me to run with that? Or?
If you don't mind. Okay. Do you have time?
No, it's just an email.
Okay.
Okay. PSR program update. I know you mentioned, you did mention, it sounds like we got two more that want to come aboard. Is that what you were?
I have one more who, he actually lives in Tustin.
Right.
Committing Saturday at a mandatory PSR session down at the academy.
Okay. Has he, so he's all right, he's applied and everything
he's
else?
He's already a PSR.
Oh, he is, okay.
And he wants to volunteer to.
Okay,
here.
Got it.
Work in Villa Park.
So that gives us a total of three now, I believe. Is that where we're at?
I believe it'll bring it to
four.
It'll
yeah.
bring it to four? Okay. All right. Anything on your end, Jay, as far as PSRs are concerned that you...
The only comment I have is that there's going to be a recruiting day, testing day for reserves, PSRs. I think CSOs, whatever, coming up on, I think it's the 25th of this month at the Tustin facility. So if we want to put that out to the community through Neighborhood Watch, through CERT, for people who could, you know, come on board as a PSR, which would be very, very helpful, because then their CERT training, no problem, they can take it, and all that good stuff happens.
Maybe Wayne can send a blast out to the
Wayne
block captains. Pardon?
Wayne won't be back till the 15th.
Oh, he won't? Okay.
That's the one item on the... on the vacation watch list that I have also on my list as well, because he's across the street from me.
How can we best get that information out to the residents to let them know that we got a recruitment?
Does anybody else have access to the neighborhood watch list, or should we just put it in the?
I mean, put it in the feeder, but that there aren't that many residents that are on the mailing list. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when you're on
neighborhood watch is the best way to do it.
The feeder. There's not a lot on there?
No. There's a number of people, but a lot of them are out-of-town merchants.
Oh, really?
People. Yeah.
What about that little, what about the little caption there on the register on in the newspaper?
Yeah, there we go. That's
they,
a good idea.
They got the little Villa Park, City of Villa Park thing down there. Is there any way to do a little five-line thing on that? And I don't, who actually sends those to the register? Because I see them, like there was one tonight for our meeting tonight,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think, he's called me, you know, from time to time.
Who's Jonathan?
Jonathan Winthrow, I think is his name.
Okay.
I have an actual
name. Porter.
But I've talked to him.
Oh, I got you.
And he would put something in. If you want to outline something, give it to me, and I'll see that he gets it.
Jay, can you do that? I mean, we might as well see if we can reach out to that way and see if it works, you know. Maybe get something to Don and mm-hmm. see if we can... Let them know there's a recruitment day out there, and you never know. Might be able to snag a couple more.
Yeah.
PSR process, the way it usually takes, they would not be PSRs in enough time to take the upcoming
right.
set of classes.
No, but there's supposedly going to be a whole bunch of classes coming up.
Okay.
That's what they told
and
me.
It's,
well, the, what they gave us Saturday is it's going to be one day a month over 3 months, 40-hour group of classes. And once you sign up for one, you're committed for all.
Yeah. Okay.
And as far as utilization of the PSRs, where do we stand on that? Is there, Lieutenant, have you guys? I mean, how are they being utilized? I know a couple months ago we talked about the fact that you know the cars were just sitting; they weren't being used. And
so Jay's done an amazing job with this.
Okay.
And here's where we're at: the North Patrol Reserve Bureau. I'll be the first to admit was probably a little neglected. And so what we've done is we've brought them all together, brought them in and part of the family. My administrative sergeant, who you will be meeting the next city council meeting, because I'll be at Texas for an emergency management class, he is the reserve coordinator for North Patrol. And so with the reserves, we put together an annual training schedule. They're going to train monthly starting tomorrow with riot control, mobile field force techniques, and so on. With the PSRs, that's a whole different ball of wax because we have three.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't really call this that we have a PSR program. We have three people that we need to find something to do with. And so right now, Jay has an ops plan that we're vetting through the reserve division. But the reality of the situation is what we've been doing in the past, the model that we've used, has left us open to some pretty extreme liability and risk. and that is going in service directly out of this station without any type of sworn involvement at all. So what we've asked is the PSRs, in addition to the reserves, come more under the fold of the Sheriff's Department of Headquarters, and then we can utilize them for what they were originally intended, which is non-uniform patrol and the white units. But with that, looking at your sign-up sheet, there was one, I think, a few months ago, and then the last one was probably 6 months before that. So right now, until there's more involvement with the program, I don't see this as fulfilling what the council initially intended them to fulfill. And I think Jay is definitely on the right track with trying to increase the recruitment. But until that time happens, we're not there.
Right. Well, the volunteers that we've got currently, can't they just do vacation checks or something? Or, you know,
the three that you have? Absolutely, yeah. They can.
Okay.
But it doesn't appear that they're signing up for it.
Oh, okay.
Right. What's that?
I don't know who to check, except the one I check across the street, and I don't book that one. I just go check it because they're friends of mine. But we don't, the PSRs don't have a vacation list.
Well, I tell you what, Tom, why don't you give me a call off-channel tomorrow? Actually, make it Thursday because I'm in training tomorrow as well. And let's talk about that and see what we can do to bring in the fold.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Good.
All right.
Yeah, even if they can, you know, do the vacation checks and just cruise around the town to just show off the car.
Absolutely.
Speaking of that, has anybody seen the city of Orange, what they're doing?
Yeah.
When you get off the 55 freeway at Cotello, there's black and white just sitting there.
Every day.
Every day.
Same spot.
As you come off the ramp, so that's the first thing you see. When you get off in the city of Orange,
slow it down a little bit.
Orange PD, black and white.
Yeah.
I saw one at the 55 freeway in Lincoln, up north.
Right.
They're leaving them there too long, though.
They are. But it's. I think it's effective.
Yeah. Oh, hey. For sure. Yeah. For
it's
sure.
Like 55, Tele 55 in Lincoln.
Yeah. And one other intersection where I saw them, but it's right where the freeway dumps off in the city of Orange. There's a black and white.
And, you know, that might be something we want to look at doing.
We have a decoy car, and we've used it. They were using it before, and it was and it worked.
But they're allowed to move the decoy car, right? The PSRs?
No, we drive only the white car that's been followed.
Right.
Oh, didn't they?
We'd have one of the deputies
decoy
come out.
Car back.
Yeah.
You know, we still have it.
We still have it.
Well, I guess the PSRs could give a deputy a ride back from wherever they place the car.
That's what I'm saying. It's easier to move it if you got someone else helping.
The PSRs are supposed to be allowed to do subject to the commanding officer.
And I'm sorry to be so restrictive with most of this. It's just the liability component frightens me.
Yeah, well, just we can get the cars, you know, being seen around the city, make it look like we've got...
Sounds pretty reasonable.
You know, Orange, that thing is effective because I find myself as that car's up here.
Yeah, and you know it's a decoy.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind it's a decoy, but you find yourself...
Yeah, but the one time you assume it's a decoy, those lights are on behind you.
So wait, can I ask a quick question about the PSR thing? Maybe I wasn't paying attention. So we're not doing it because you don't have a list, or we're not driving the cars?
We're not doing vacation checks because we don't know who to check.
That,
but you are out in the car.
That and signups, as far as getting people going out.
You have not been out in the car?
I have.
Oh.
In fact, I was the first one to take it out. My concern, and we talked about this the other day, we're supposed to call Mike Lee when we take the car out, but he's working at the high school. We don't know if he's going to be in his office or if he's available to call him. So the other alternative is to call in to dispatch.
Well, and see, this is part of the issue that we're talking about here. And listen, I don't mean to air Sheriff's Department dirty laundry, but it's got bearing on the conversation. So our reserve division decentralized probably about 2 years ago, which meant that the reserves that all reported to the reserve division now reported to the individual areas. So they did that, just neglected to tell everybody that they did that. So we didn't know that we had reserves that were reporting to us, so our command structure was a little askew. Hence... we have people that they just don't know.
Don't
so the module reserves, they're in compliance now with the goals of the department. Now it appears we've overturned another stone, and we need to bring the PSRs a little more in the fold because they shouldn't be calling Mike Lee. They should be calling our operations sergeant, who you'll meet next month. So that way, just in case, because we had a reserve PSR, as a matter of fact, that San Clemente is still kind of issuing parking citations. Well, the angry citizen came out and punched the PSR right in the face and knocked him out. That didn't work out so hot.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take a more cautious approach with it. And it's difficult for me to wrap my head around that we would ever have anybody going out in a sheriff's department capacity and just nobody knows
about
it. Yeah,
I think San Clemente, right. That probably wasn't even a PSR. That was probably there. They probably have their own program.
Stars. Yeah.
Yep.
And so with us, we'll rectify this and we'll get them back out there. But even with that, the number of signups that I see on the sheet back there are lower than I think we would like.
Signups as in vacation relief or signups as PSR?
Signups to take the cars out and
drive that's what I was trying to get at.
We're not going to have a robust PSR program until we get the bodies. Tom's thank you for, stepping up and, it sounds like we kind of got a one-man show right now as far as signups and people that want to be involved. So appreciate it.
Reba, who's the director of the program, and Mark Raisin, who's the zone manager, and they had a big blank behind the Villa Park for the city supervisor. And guess what? I'm it.
Kind of like being a vice chair, right?
So anyway, from that we can start building up communications within the PSR.
Perfect.
And I have the phone number of the individual.
Yeah, just the car getting out, people seeing it, that's always going to be a deterrent,
Get out.
Just seeing a car driving around with the people, someone that's thinking about doing a crime, when they see someone driving around with another set of eyes, it's clearly a set of eyes looking for, that's all it takes.
It does make a difference.
Yep.
We were having a situation up on Featherhill, and I took the car up there the day after the meeting just to see what was going on. There were two cars parked there, and I saw the car coming on the street. I went up the street and turned around, and they took off. Mm-hmm. That same day, I was over, I can't remember what size we have, trying to make a left turn on the Lemon. That was the same day they had some kind of a problem over on Canada, that all the traffic was being diverted. And everybody that came by that saw the car there, they all slowed down.
All right.
The car does have an effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll tell the new city manager that you really want to stimulate the recruitment for the PSRs. And we'll discuss some ideas as to how to get the word out.
Sounds good.
I think just a couple little lines of communication here, I think, are going to make a big difference. I think now that we have the cars, and there was such a long period of time when we were trying to get the cars, kind of took a lot of energy away from some folks that wanted to get involved because it took so long. I think a little bit more recruiting push, a little better communication, and just reemphasize the PSRs. It's not so much about going out and getting involved in things. It's going out there and being seen. And if, heaven forbid we do see something, then of course we let our sworn personnel know. But just get some miles on those tires. That's the biggest thing. And I want to personally thank the lieutenant for being so frank and candid with some things that we need to improve upon. I think we have a brighter future ahead of us. And thank Jay for all his work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
All right, let's move on to G, ongoing crime prevention and traffic safety recommendations. Anyone got anything?
Yeah, there's an intersection of Center Street, I think it is, and Taft. I think that's the one, where it's a very dark intersection. If you look at the on the west side of the street, there's a raised median.
I almost hit that thing the other night. I know exactly what you're talking about. Making the left turn.
You and 1,000 other people.
Yeah.
Anyway, if we could suggest to the city engineer to, how they put in like bots dots to define a turn arc, maybe that would help because it's such a dark intersection. I know we have, we have at least lines over at the intersection of Wanda and Catella. But you see them around, and I think they serve a good purpose to help identify, where you should be turning in the intersection.
maybe make them reflectorized
exactly.
as well.
Yeah, yeah, so I see the bots dot sort of thing.
It's right. Just... Is that's probably a very inexpensive to do something
yeah,
like that. And I think it would work.
Because that whole thing gets
changed. And the other thing too is, you know, they can even use the reflectorized paint on that median so that the lights will light it up too. Because when I made that turn at night, making that left turn, that thing has no paint on it that would.
Well, there's a big project, you know, $700,000
yeah. okay,
project
got it.
To change that. But in the interim, mm-hmm. and that median gets changed.
Right.
But in the interim, this would be a good thing. So we'll talk to Akron about
right. that. Brent, you were...
Yeah, for crime prevention. As you guys know, I addressed you guys back in November, I think it was. I was talking about the shopping center. And Wednesday mornings are late start for Saragilla. So we've got a lot of Saragilla kids running amok in Ralph's and Bagel Me and whatnot. It's been rattling the cage at the district level. And they actually followed through on some promises. So they hired a security guard for Saragilla's campus. That person has not started yet. But they have hired the person, and that's going to give me the leeway to get every kid on his way out of here that's loitering,
uh-huh.
At least on Wednesday mornings. So hopefully that will deter anybody from, you know, the litter, let alone, you know, any kind of vandalisms or petty thefts that are going on here.
Security guards one day?
No. Oh. He's part-time, 5 days a week.
Nice.
I don't know his exact hours, but for sure we're going to have him on Wednesday mornings.
For
nice. Supervision.
Good. Very nice. And the school district hired him?
Yes.
Nice.
I just have one thing. Seems like this is my third time here. Come every 4 years. But not after this. Why? With Steve Franks coming, he'll be here a long time. But it seems like I'm always involved in science. And... when I first came in 2008, we got involved in designing the interim signs. And then when I came this time, I noticed that, somebody told me that there have been some robberies in the drugstore and the liquor store. And I began looking around and realizing there's no sign that says that the sheriff is here. Mm-hmm. And so... and there's a 99-cent sign that says City Hall down there. And there's really nothing about the library either. So we've asked Bravo Signs to, I'll pass that around, to come up with a couple of monument signs at the entrance that would indicate, we were going to put substation on it, but we were afraid people would begin to think that there's a 24-hour situation here, and that's not the case.
No, that's a very good idea.
Anyway, we're... going to propose it to the council on the 28th. It's about $13,000 for the two of them. And we have the money. You save a bundle when you have an interim city manager. Anyway, that's what we're going to recommend to them. Let people know that there is a sheriff back in here.
Yeah, I was just going to ask just a quick question. So the decoy car, when it's not being used, where is it typically parked? Is it
we don't have a decoy car.
We don't. Okay,
no.
The city doesn't have
what
any?
What happened to it?
The transport took it back, from what I understand.
Oh, really?
Are we talking about just a plain black and white that was back here?
Yeah.
It was operational?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
That's not a decoy car. It's just a member of our fleet. And so.
Yeah, I guess it was an older...
I thought they
wasn't it on loan from OCTA or something like that, if I recall.
Somewhere.
OCTA, I thought it was just a retired car.
I thought nobody was using that, so we.
Because I was just going to make a suggestion, like, you know, we did have some of those late night smash and grabs going on, and remember we talked about, you know, having the deputies patrol being when they were not, you know, on a call to spend some time around here. I was just brainstorming that, you know, if we had an extra unit like a decoy car, which it now sounds like we don't, to put it in a visible spot, parked like in front of City Hall, like it might give the appearance of the deputies that are working on.
So
or of a substation.
Here's what I'd ask. The Sheriff's Department's had a great relationship with the city of Villa Park, and we're going to do everything we can to continue that relationship. But with that, there's only one black and white actually assigned to the city. So if we want another one, I'll pull it out of my fleet. I just need a little bit of advance notice so I can make the appropriate moves to get a black and white to have set out here.
Yeah.
So if you can just give me a couple days advance notice, I can probably make something like that happen.
Yeah, it was actually here for quite a long time on a semi-permanent basis, and they just moved it around the city.
Yeah. I thought they just acquired a retired car.
No, unfortunately, the way it works is, and I don't quite understand this myself, but we don't even own our own vehicles. The county owns them, and when they get surveyed out, the county takes them back, mm-hmm. and then we still have to pay more money for that.
Right.
So it's a level of accounting that I'm not familiar with. But regardless.
County accounting.
There it is.
I gotcha. Yeah, because even the Orange PD one that we see over there, that one's a retired Orange PD car. It's, everything's stripped out of it.
We don't own our boats either.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Harbors, beaches, and parks, whatever they call themselves now.
That's it? Them.
Really?
Yeah. So anything else? Crime prevention, traffic safety recommendations? So I guess we'll meet in March. We're doing every other month, correct? So are we going to do first Monday in March? Does that work for everyone?
So would you say March or would you say April?
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm thinking, yeah, that's right, it's February. So April, yeah. First Monday in April? Is that the 3rd? Does that work for everyone?
Everybody good on that?
Yep.
Let's meet it. Could we meet at 6:30?
So it doesn't run over into your other meeting? Mm-hmm. All right, everyone good for 6:30 on Monday the 3rd of April? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, with that, we'll adjourn the meeting.